Okay, we're recording.
So you got questions?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, should I go ahead?
Yeah.
All right. We will go ahead and call to order our Historic Review Board meeting for December 10th, 2025, and proceed with roll call. Say.
Yeah, Lynn Schroeder, staff liaison.
Kirsten Zolberg.
Dan Salty.
John Steele. Regina Fleming.
Present.
Then we also have Kristen Brown, our consultant online, and we have a guest here, Amy Schwartz. Amy Schwartz. Okay.
All right, the first item on our agenda, or second item on our agenda, is public comment. Do we have any public comments to address?
No.
All right. Next order of business is approval of the draft meeting notes for the HRB July 15th, 2025 meeting. Would welcome a motion to approve those meeting minutes.
I'm sharing the screen right now for the meeting.
I'm not.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Just before there's a motion approved, on five, there is several items that were going to be like re-brought up. Do you guys have a timeline?
Which one?
The CDC code cleanup amendments.
Okay, I will talk about the code cleanups were dropped because those were spurred by advisory from the DLCD, Department of Land Conservation Development, and they withdrew their requirement to make those changes. So we are not going to, we're not going through it because they were kind of complicated.
Is that reflected here?
No, that would be.
Today's minutes?
Yeah.
So I believe we're looking for a second to approve the meeting minutes for our July meeting. Is that?
Yeah, is there a second for the meeting minutes?
This is Sherry. I second the meeting minutes. The approval.
Sherry Harper DeVos entered the meeting just a second ago.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Next order of business is the Robinwood Historic Property Survey.
And we have Kristen Brown, our consultant, joining us virtually. She's joining us. And she's going to share screen. So I'll turn it over to you, Kristen.
Thanks, Lynn. Hi, everybody. I've met a couple of you before, so it's nice to see you again, but I'm really happy to be talking to you today, and I'm so sorry that I can't be there in person. I'm coming to you from Reno, Nevada, so not exactly next door. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this project. Your neighborhood is beautiful. Your city is beautiful. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and after college, moved back there for a while, lived in Portland, explored the area a lot. So I had actually been to West Lynn before. So I was super excited to have the opportunity to work on this project. It really felt like I was coming home, you know, it was really nice. So I'm going to share my screen. I have a very, very basic presentation just to kind of get you some of the, you know, summarize the report. Let's see. Got to find the share screen thing. Oh, here it is. Okay. Right. So, okay.
It's right down there at the bottom.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Pick only the presentation window. Okay. Okay, great. So can you see the PDF of the slide right here? Okay, great. All right, so you guys are already, of course, familiar with the scope of work for this project, but just to kind of go over it really briefly again, this was a very high level windshield style survey. Because of the time and budget limitations, Lynn and I worked together to develop a scope of work that was as close to the Oregon SHPO's recon level survey that we could make it, but it doesn't quite follow the Oregon SHPO's recon level survey guidance. We had the blessing of the SHPO before we proceeded, of course. So we just kind of made it a very high level look at the entire neighborhood. And this was done also not only just because of the time, you know, involved, but also because of the large number of resources. It made the most sense to get the, you know, the high level look to really start to hone down sections of the neighborhood that might warrant a little bit more intensive level, and maybe not a full intensive level survey, but maybe more of that traditional reconnaissance level survey where there's, you know, more time for research and analysis and that kind of thing. So that's what we did. I traveled to Oregon this summer to do the field work. And let's get going on this presentation. So the kind of survey process was in two parts, two large parts. It was basically the research phase and the documentation phase. And really quick, just a note, is it possible to mute that room for a minute? Just because there's a lot of clack, like the microphone is really sensitive, I think. Awesome, thank you. Okay. So the research phase kind of happened before, during, and after the field work, but with an emphasis on, you know, the finer points being after. But we did as much research as we could first to kind of get understand, you know, the neighborhood and its character and its history and time period. And then I did some research in person when I was in Oregon. And then when I returned, my colleague Zoanne Campana and I did even more research, and we were able to delve a little bit more into things like the historic newspapers online and that kind of thing. So the archival research included more places than what I have here, but these are really the, I would say, primary places where we were able to obtain the most amount of information about Robinwood. Of course, the county assessor's office and recorder's office was crucial, because and the records are very nicely digitized. The Clackamas County Historical Society, what a gem. I loved going there. It was such a neat place. They were extremely helpful, and they did have a number of files full of, you know, clippings and ephemera, that kind of thing. And then the public library had some good stuff. And then a lot of what we found ended up coming from historic newspapers that were digitized online. So the actual survey and documentation part was also kind of a multi-phase part. I started before even coming to Oregon. I did what I called the desktop survey. And that was really sort of just the first pass look at Robinwood so that I could really understand the lay of the land, how everything was sort of organized, the circulation patterns, the general character of the neighborhood, the try to get a sense of what buildings might have good integrity versus not from the very beginning, so that I knew what I was getting into, because I had to be fast when I was there in person. There was only so many days that I was there for. So how I did the desktop survey was relied heavily on things like Google Street View, aerial photography, including some of the historic older aerials to compare, and then those assessor records, that kind of thing, to get that fieldwork ready to go. And then I could hit the ground running when I was in Oregon, and I was out pounding the pavement several days in a row, is when I did the photography and the notes of, you know, contributing non-alterations, just jotting down notes about, you know, as I went, some of the, you know, different, all the, you know, the buildings in the different parts of town. Upon returning to Nevada, I was able to organize all of that data, label all the photographs by address, and start plotting all of this on maps. We have GIS staff at our office, of course, and they were very instrumental to help get all of that mapped out. There were different iterations of these things. And then I put it all into an inventory table, which you've seen in the report appendix as well. So I could start organizing this data and really understanding it. So After all that data was organized, then it was time to really crunch the numbers and kind of just look at it and say, what do we have here? What's the data? What's the character? How do I analyze all of it? So obviously one of the most important things and goals of this survey was to figure out which buildings would contribute versus not contribute to a potential historic district. And you've probably saw that section of the report where I kind of explain, when you do this large of a survey and it's this high level windshield style, what you kind of have to do is you have to really start by assuming that the whole place is a district, because we don't know yet. We don't know why this place is important. We don't know what type of resources we have. We don't know how many contributing versus non. So we really have to start from this strange place where we just say, let's pretend the whole of Robinwood is a historic district. If it were a district, would these buildings have enough physical integrity to either contribute or to not contribute, period? I mean, you can't really delve into it much deeper than that at the beginning, right? So that's what I did. Anything that was built, I inventoried and photographed everything that was built through 1975, including 1975. Lynn and I talked about it, but the budget just from the grant was simply not enough to go ahead and document anything beyond that 50-year cutoff, which is fine. That's very normal for a survey. So as you guys are already aware, everything that is not yet 50 years of age kind of automatically is considered non-contributing. But for the purposes of this survey, I didn't map all of that, and I didn't really count those in the counts because I wanted you to get more of a look of your historic age resources. There's a lot of non-contributing. We'll get to some numbers in a minute. If you add in the non-historic resources, it makes it such that you guys have majority non-contributing, right? So we just really focused on the historic age resources and analyzed those. Once I was able to plot everything on that inventory table, I was able to really drill down to see what types of styles were common in the district or not common, what types of alterations, what the different ages of construction, you know, dates of construction were, so to get that, build that understanding of the character of this neighborhood. And finally, once we had all of that and we had the map ready, we could then take a look to see if there might be some potential historic districts. And the best way to do that is to look for, well, to use the historic plats, of course, because those represent sort of these nice little ready-made boundaries, as it were. So you can use those plats, but you don't have to stick to the plats. You can, you know, draw outside the lines too. But just looking for those really dense clusters of historic age contributing buildings. And then beyond that, looking to see if they have some sort of cohesion or commonalities that might make them feel like a collection of like resources, which a historic district really is, right? Some sort of theme or character that they might have in common to present as a logical assortment of resources that might qualify as a district. So that's kind of the analysis phase there. So once you have all that analysis done, then you can start really making some, you know, calling what you see, stating what the results are, and making some recommendations for future work. So the findings, as I said, we did a lot here. We documented 620 buildings that were built through 1975. As you're already aware, it's heavily residential in nature. 600 of those are residential, with 3 of those being multifamily and the rest being single family homes. Not really a surprise to you there. The age distribution was very wide. As you saw in the report, it started out as early as the 20s, but very little development occurred throughout the 20s and 30s. It slowly started to pick up in the 40s and very early 1950s. And then by about 1952, it was off to the races. And the rest of the 50s, 60s, 70s, tons of development, very steady, very little in the way of ebbs and flows, just steady development through that rest of that historic period. And then, of course, additional development beyond the end of that historic period. As you see right here down at the bottom of this slide, although we surveyed 620, if you include everything that was built in the neighborhood after 1975, the total jumps to over 1,000 and over 1,100. And that means that if you really think about it, Robinwood has only 43.3% potentially contributing resources, because all of those non-historic would also have to be considered non-contributing, right? So obviously the whole of Robinwood is not going to be a giant historic district. But of those that we did survey, of those that were built through 1975, you have a remarkably high percentage of potentially contributing resources, with over 77% retaining sufficient physical integrity to be considered a contributing resource if there were a district. The findings also noted a pretty wide mix of styles, obviously heavily on the mid 20th century styles. There's the most common styles that we found were, of course, by far ranch, and that includes some modern ranch here. We have the early iterations, the sort of styles that led to the ranch, which are the minimal traditional and the transitional ranch. Those are kind of, the minimal traditional is kind of that bridge between some of those earlier historic styles, and then the transitional ranch being on the way to a ranch, really. And then you have some of the more modern styles, and you have like mid-century modern. And then coming up closer to the present day, you start to see things like contemporary and split level. So one of the recommendations that Lynn asked for, which is also common in a lot of survey reports of this nature, are to try to identify some buildings that might have individual significance. This list is, I'm calling it high priority resources, because, you know, based on the high level nature of the survey, we don't know if they are individually eligible or not. We, you know, this type of survey, we don't have the luxury of doing a lot of research, doing building specific research. These are just resources that, and this might not be even a complete list. As you're well aware, this neighborhood is heavily wooded. There's a lot of tree cover, a lot of topography challenges to really get a good look at some of these resources. This is the best I could do. There's 40 that I thought might rise to the level of individual significance. Thankfully, the internet exists, and for a lot of these resources, when they were placed for sale within the last decade or 15 years, a lot of them still have real estate photos online. So that was kind of a fun thing to discover, to be able to actually see some of the interiors of some of these buildings and hope that somebody didn't alter them too much since it was last, you know, put on the market. But these are the resources that they could potentially be eligible for the National Register, or they could be eligible as Westland local historic landmarks. They just warrant a little bit more investigation. It'd be nice to be able to see all elevations of the building, to maybe see the interior, and to be able to start digging into the research, you know, researching them a little bit more to try to figure out if we can identify an architect or, you know, the original owners, or if it was a design build type contractor, or who knows? So this is just ideas for future research type of a thing here. And then, of course, we also made recommendations for areas of Robinwood that may have significance as potential districts at some point. Again, these could be National Register, or they could be more of a local historic district. You know, until you have the luxury of doing additional research and investigation, it's hard to say. Of the six, I have slides for each one of them, or I have maps shown for each one of them, but I discussed them a little bit more in the report, of course. They all have pretty good cohesive character and feeling that when you're within these parts of town, it kind of feels a little bit more like a district, if that makes sense. You're in a part of town and you think, oh, I feel like I'm somewhere. It's hard to explain, but I just feel like this little corner of the neighborhood is a little bit different than just one of those big open streets or areas with a lot of new houses, that kind of thing. One thing that also is important to keep in mind is, as you know, for the National Register, there are four eligibility criteria, A being history, B being important people, right? And C being architecture, design, engineering, that type of thing, right? So since this was just this sort of windshield level survey, we did not have the luxury of delving into things like significance under A or B. We really had to, as is common for this type of survey, we really had to just sort of look at it from an architecture and design standpoint and really focus on eligibility under criterion C, because that's what you can see from the right of way, right? Okay, so the districts, and let me, I'm gonna grab my, so I can kind of follow along here and kind of explain them to you a little bit. One moment, I'm scrolling. Let's see. Okay. So here we have on the left, the Robin Wood Historic District. This is similar to the original Robin Wood plat. It's not exactly the whole originally platted Robin Wood plat, but this is sort of mostly conforming to that plat, to the built out part of the plat. This one is interesting because it represents, of course, the earliest beginnings of the development. This area was platted in 1923. It was called the Robin Wood Subdivision, so it's also important because it sort of gave the name to the whole part of town, right? It does have some of the earlier buildings. It has some 1930s, 1940s buildings. But the only problem with this one is that even though I'm recommending it, that it might warrant additional investigation, the only problem with this one is that it does have a lot of infill, as you can see from the slide. All of those blank parcels that are not colored in pink or blue, those are, you know, not 50 years of age yet. And then of course, all of the pink ones are non-contributing. So the percentages here are not ideal. The amount of non-contributing and modern buildings are not ideal for a National Register district, at least. I'm not sure, it might have potential as some, you know, something locally. So on the right, we have the Cedar Oak district that I've marked out here in red. This does not just include the original Cedar Oak plat. It includes a little bit extra around it, such as the park and the school. The buildings that surround the school. But it also is pretty good representation of that Cedar Oak part of town that was pretty early, platted pretty early on in Robin Wood's history. And as you can see from the map, it has a very dense collection of potentially contributing resources. So that's something to look at. And the school being the anchor of that neighborhood is very important because the school is one of the most significant resources in the entire Robin Wood area, right? It's a wonderful mid-century modern school with pretty high level of integrity. So that serving as an anchor makes that an interesting potential historic district to me. This one on the left, I'm calling it the Old River Cherokee Mid-Century Historic District because it is, there's several mid-century modern buildings in this district, as well as some modern ranch houses and some really nice examples of regular ranch houses as well. All of them are contributing except this parcel here. I'm not even sure if there's a building on that parcel, to be honest with you, but if there is, it's not historic. It has a very cohesive feel as you're moving along this district, and Cherokee in particular, it feels like a very special little corner of Robin Wood to me. A lot of 1950s in here. Okay, on the right, we have the Shawa Awa, and this corresponds to the plat called the Shawa Awa Subdivision, which dates to 1961. And this little area of town has a lot of really nice examples of early 1960s houses, including things like ranches, modern ranch, mid-century modern, and some split levels too. It has a range of dates, but some good 60s examples. And it feels, because of the way the street is in that loop, and how it has its own entrance from the main drag. It feels like it's sort of set apart from the rest of the neighborhood, and it feels like its own thing a little bit. Okay, here on the left, I'm calling this the Upper Mid Hill Split Level Historic District, because it's pretty great collection of split level houses. It's funny to think that houses like that are now considered historic. You know, growing up, I would have never imagined that that would be the case, but the fact remains, they are now historic resources. They are 50 years or older. And this stretch of Upper Mid Hill has a really nice collection of them. And finally, Maria Court, tentatively called Maria Court Ranch House Historic District. And this is because it's got some excellent ranch houses, just classic, well-designed. Look up ranch in the dictionary. This is what it is. They're nice. They're not tiny though. They're pretty substantial, right? So when you're on Maria Court, again, it's a court, it's a dead end, it's its own, you know, nice little cohesive collection, and you feel like you're somewhere in a way. So that's why I selected that one as well. So that's the very high level sort of summary of what I found. The report, of course, goes into all of this in much more detail. I have photos here. I have the report pulled up on my computer, and I have the folder full of photos. So if anybody has any questions or wants to take a look at any resources in particular, I'd be happy to pull something up for you. But in the meantime, you guys can unmute. And so you let me know, what do you think? If you have any feedback for me, I absolutely welcome it.
Well, you know, this is, I find this really interesting. I would have, am I getting feedback? Me? Yeah. Are we, okay. Anyway, I would have loved to see some, of the photos of these, maybe an example from each potential districts in the report.
Oh, sure, we can add that.
Yeah, that'd be really helpful.
Just so we get like
So are you talking about we don't have the. Unfortunately, it wasn't very easy to get streetscape photographs because of the vegetation, the topography, and the sort of some of the streets, the distance between the houses. So I tried to get some streetscapes, and when I got back to the office, I realized they didn't really work. So you can only see, you know, one house anyway, and you can't even see that very well. So are you thinking more, would it be okay if it was more just like maybe a couple of representative buildings from that area? Okay.
You could split the page and do a picture of one and another that just represent what we're talking about. Maybe the best ones.
Yeah.
Proposing.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel the same way about the 40 most important ones. Like if you have images of them, I'd definitely be interested.
Okay.
In the 40 ones that you think are most likely to qualify for historic registration.
Sure. Maybe I can put that in an appendix so the report flows.
Yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't disrupt the flow of the text so much. No problem.
Do you think that, I mean, I guess as an appendix too, that each of the potentially contributing resource in the district, should we include those? How many photos would that be?
That would be a lot of photos.
I think
that would be a lot.
Report, right?
Oh yeah. I mean,
do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a little different.
Do you know what might be easier for your?
That's what I
have. Yeah.
Hers looks different, right?
Oh yeah, she could have.
What we could do instead of creating an appendix with embedded and captioned photos. What I could do is I could create additional photo folders. Like right now, you guys have all of the photo, you have all 620 buildings in a folder labeled by address, alphabetically by street. So I could create multiple additional photos of, you know, folders of photos and copy, not cut, but copy, you know, for each district into each folder. That way you could just pull it up and page through it as JPEGs.
Yeah.
That would be cleaner, I think. And then you could do with them whatever you wanted to. You just have it right on your desktop or, you know, on your server and just pull it up.
Yeah.
Lynn, how do we access those photos?
Well, I've been struggling with that because there are so many. But if we have these smaller photos, they're very high resolution, but the smaller folders, I'm thinking about that we would put them on the website for you guys.
Okay.
But in terms of our archiving, you know, for, you know, 50 years from now, we do need to archive these with this document. So I'm kind of still struggling with how we're going to archive it and connect photos to the report.
Are we doing something similar in Willamette? Do we have photos of all the major resources?
In Willamette, yeah, there's just little thumbnail pictures of everything.
It's just in the back of
it. Yeah, okay. But that's an RLS.
So
reconnaissance level survey. This is a higher survey, yeah.
Well, I will also say, let me pull one moment. Let me share something else really quick with you from, so I can have another idea. One moment. Let's see. It's opening. One moment. Here we go. Okay, here we go. Let me share again real quick. Okay, so this is the thumbnail document that we made for all 620, just so that the Oregon SHPO could see that we did indeed take photos of all the buildings, so they knew that the deliverable was complete for the grant, right? We can do this, we can actually it's kind of like contact prints. Our formatting and graphics person can generate these pretty quickly. So I could actually have her do this, but instead of putting this many on a page, we could try to make it so that there was maybe, you know, four on a page or something. And we could do that for, we could actually do that for the entire survey. And we could also maybe do it for the different recommended districts. That way you can put it on your website more easily, and then you can decide what you want to do with those big JPEGs. You could always resize them too, but it's just a thought. You don't have to decide right now.
Yeah, I kind of like it, at least for the district, so we could, you know, have some paid, you know, thumbnails for each district, so we can get an idea where it's at.
And if there's a way to do that also for those 40 most important ones, I would just love to look at those in one place and potentially think about approaching the owners to see if they might be interested in going to the next step.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So definitely for those, that'll be very easy to do.
This is 20 right here.
Which isn't bad. I mean, you get it.
So that's the address. So you can dig into it once you see it.
Yeah,
that is the address, isn't it?
Yeah. They label them really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 20 to a sheet is probably pretty darn great.
Yeah, 22 sheets would be good. Yeah.
So for something like your website for the public, I think the 20 is probably sufficient. It is hard to make out some of them, and then occasionally an address will get cut off. Like down here, I had called, it's just a file name problem. I had called it boat ramp just so I remember, you know, it stuck out a little bit more. So it gets cut off a little bit, but it's not the end of the world. Most of them are fine. Most of them don't get cut off. So, well, Lynn, you and I can decide. The 20 works, I think the 20 works great for the website since it keeps the PDF a little smaller. But if you decide you want one where there's 6 or 4 on the page, we can certainly do that too.
Okay.
And then for the high priority, I think we can do, you know, maybe 1 to 2 of them, maybe 2 on a page. So it's really easy to see those.
For which one?
For high priority.
For the high priority ones.
I think 4 to a page could be great just to get a
4. Okay. Sure. Yeah, no problem.
And that sounds great.
I wanted to mention that I'm thrilled that the Cedar Oak Primary School caught your attention because I just think that's a great mid-century modern building. It's really nice.
I agree.
For like a centering piece for that potential historic zone.
Yeah. I'm glad you agree. Yeah. It's great. It's great.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It looks like a great report. We'll be using it for years.
Yeah. I appreciate the context statement. You know, are we allowed to call it that? The preliminary context statement, I guess, is what we're allowed.
Right,
to.
Sure, yeah. It's
I think people really enjoy that part of the report. So but I was actually pretty interested to know that we have these little districts, so they would each be listed separately, right?
The way I envisioned it was that they would just be these little standalone where you could, if you so desired, you could pick one every CLG grant cycle, you know, to go for it one at a time. But don't forget about the opportunity that is with the multiple property documentation form too. I don't know if you guys, you don't have any multiple property forms in Westland, right?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
It could be
something interesting to look into as at more of a citywide level, not just Robinwood. Because I will say something I forgot to mention earlier is that in my research, I kept getting lured astray by interesting looking buildings that were not in Robinwood, right? I think that you guys have a lot of really good mid-century buildings out of Robinwood as well, up into the hills to the west, for example. And I think that if you had a multiple property documentation form and one of the themes was mid-century modern architecture, and maybe one of the themes was early transitional ranch styles and then ranch styles, those could kind of be umbrella themes under criterion C at the very least. Later you could even expand the themes to include other things like under criterion A, right? But if you had these themes set out, the multiple property form then becomes an umbrella document. And it includes what we call registration requirements. So it basically is a how-to guide of how to nominate districts to the National Register. So it's treated as an umbrella document in that the most heavy lifting and the most time-consuming amount of work is up front to set out this overarching thing where it says, here's the history of our city, here's the development patterns, here's the information that you need about mid-century modern architecture, its development, its characteristics, you know, architectural, everything. And it gives you everything you want to know. And then it goes on and it says the following would be the criteria under which a district would or would not be eligible under this theme. So if one of the themes was mid-century modern architecture, it would say things like, oh, the buildings in this potential district should be built between these years. There should be the following, you know, decorative elements present, that kind of thing. And then it's plug and play after that. So like I say, all of the hard work comes up front in that type of document. But once it sets out those registration requirements, It's basically a roadmap to how to list little smaller districts under those themes, but it's in a streamlined way so you do not have to reinvent the wheel every time. You just sort of plug into whatever those registration requirements and those existing themes already are, and then you get to write a very short and sweet little nomination every time you nominate a district under that umbrella, because all that background stuff has already been written. So you could totally do that. I suspect Westlyn, larger Westlyn, probably has some really good. I was part of, just as an aside, my first introduction to working with multiple property documentation forms was many, many years ago, and it was for the city of Phoenix, Arizona. And they already had a multiple property, and their themes were really about really early residential development, like streetcar suburbs from the late 1800s to early 1900s. And then they had another one that was about, you know, kind of more like the bungalow and craftsman era. But they had yet to write any of those umbrella themes for the mid-century architecture. So the firm I was working for at the time was hired to add additional new themes to talk about things like the 1950s and 1960s and the type of resources that you would find. And then they asked us to nominate 10 new National Register districts under this multiple property umbrella. And we did. We listed 2,000 buildings in Phoenix in 10 different neighborhoods. And every single one of those nominations was very short because it just got plugged in under that MPDF. So that could be something to think about too. Something to talk to SHPO about, run it by them, see what they think. But it would require, you know, like I say, it's kind of a lot more work up front, and then it becomes much easier down the line every time you want to add another district.
Okay. Well, okay. But you still have to have a cohesive district. You couldn't have.
So, and by the way, now that I'm talking about this, I'm going to add this to my recommendation section, but it's more going to be on the, I'm not going to go into it that much. I'm just going to talk about it, but it's going to be more on a citywide scale, not Robinwood. So to answer your question, you only have to nominate one. So the way you submit a multiple property to the keeper of the National Register, the way the regs are written is that you only have to, you have to submit that big document, the umbrella groundwork document, and one district under it. That's it.
And how many houses? Like, and just one.
It doesn't matter. It can be, yeah, it can be tiny. It can be a tiny district. You could write this whole document and you could identify several themes like early ranch, ranch, mid-century, say, I don't know, split level, I don't know. And then you could just say, all we're going to do right now is we're going to nominate, you know, the Shawa Awa or the whatever. And we're just going to put that one as our first one, because it only takes one. Once that's memorialized and formally listed in the National Register, then you can slowly but surely start adding districts for years to come, forever, under it.
Okay.
Great to know about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so that would be great if you added that in the recommendations.
I will.
We do have other, like Buck Street and Bolton has a lot of mid-century modern that that could be a district, and if we could, you know,
and Hidden Springs.
Yeah. Hidden Springs is more ranch.
Great.
I think there's quite a few mid-century moderns as you climb up the hill. Oh, as she had mentioned, to the west.
Okay, all right. Yeah, okay, that'd be great.
Okay.
Any other?
So this is, after this draft is formalized after this meeting, this is done, right?
Yeah, no, this project's done.
Further action we need. It's a resource for now for us.
Yeah, it'll be a resource going forward. Perfect. Yeah. And then the question would be is whether or not
those areas
want to be a district. You know. And I do want to mention and items of interest, I mentioned about that, but not a district though. Okay. So if what I've asked Kristen to do is kind of, and I don't know if this is going to work for her, but we're going to leave this open till next week to have any additional comments. I've asked the Robinwood neighborhood to read this and get any comments back to me, but I don't think they did. I don't know. And then
did it go to their little community council? Was it shared on their?
They had a Robinwood. They had a meeting, I believe, yesterday.
Yeah.
But I wasn't able to go to it. I'm going to go to it in January. But
and there's an updated draft. It looks like, right? This one's dated.
This is the only one I've got.
You have an updated draft, right, Kristen? That we don't have. Like your front cover looks a little different. Or is this?
No,
I'm tiny. I just realized, and you can't see possibly what I'm holding up. But
I know the only draft that we have is dated November 2025, and it has a watermark saying draft across the title page.
Yeah, I mean this is it.
Can you pull up yours again on your screen? Can you share?
Yeah.
Yes. Let's see. Okay. So this is the draft. Here's it says draft here and then on the title page.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's just
okay, sure. So what I can be doing. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just gonna say I can start certainly with some of these small edits that we just discussed, and have folks help me get these new thumbnail, you know, contact sheet type things organized, add that additional recommendation at the end. But if you have any edits, like editorial type edits, corrections, you know, anything like that, get those to me as soon as you can with the holiday is around the corner. I know the SHPO wants this whole project wrapped up at the end of the month, but with the holidays, I really want to get that done before Christmas because I can't count on the rest of the office staff to be around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't see really any other edits except for adding those pictures, just what we discussed here. And I don't anticipate that Robin would have any comments.
Okay.
So I think we're pretty good, but yeah. Any comments?
We'll let you know if we see
anything.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I will certainly go and start adding photos and get that all squared away. And I can be doing that in the meantime until we wait for the comment period to end for the neighborhood too. And I mean, I can always roll in a couple other little things as long as it's within reason. It's not, you know, for the time.
Oh yeah.
All right. Great. Sounds good.
Thank you for your hard work.
Yeah, this is just really fun, really interesting.
You are so welcome. Yes, thanks for the opportunity.
And it's been a pleasure to work with you. You've done a great job for us, and appreciate this document.
Thanks. It's been really fun. It's been really fun getting to know you guys in the neighborhood and everything. So thanks again.
Okay.
Yeah, just send me an email if you think of anything else. Great. All right. All right. Well, I'll let you guys finish your meeting and have a good rest of your night.
All right. Thank you too. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Thanks again.
Awesome. Okay. Next on our agenda is historic review board work plan.
Okay, so we had some meetings that we missed, but I wanted to let you know about the work plan that the city council put together. We have some copies there, and I think I sent some to you in the emails. So what the the HRB serves as a quasi-judicial board making recommendations on design reviews and National Register documents. So that's what they, what you do, that's your primary focus, and that's your primary activity. But there's additional activities that the city council identified. So 1 and 2 are your regular historic duties for National Register and local local landmarks. And so the third activity is the evaluation of the Robinwood inventory. And then we originally talked about helping document the Westland paper mill history, but I don't know if if that's still applicable because things have moved forward on that property.
For that number 3, it says December 2026. That's just not to say 25, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then additionally identify any more historic preservation projects or grant opportunities.
So going back to 4, you said things have moved forward on that property. Could you elaborate?
Well, originally we talked about documenting the equipment inside, but the equipment's been sold and I believe it's been moved off site. We tried to get
heavy equipment.
Yeah, it's heavy equipment. I don't know if it's been moved off site. I believe it has been, but we asked the auction company who took pictures of all the equipment for copies of their photos, because there are some pretty good photos. You can see them online, and they didn't give it to us. So, I mean, they didn't even ever call us back. So, so we don't have any pictures of the equipment. I mean, I took screenshots of what they had, so we have those, but.
We have to see the last remaining aspects of it working.
Yeah. The what?
We saw like what the last.
Our 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was.
Years ago?
Yeah. Okay,
So aside from the equipment, it seems like even the buildings haven't been very well documented. And
well, James, and he's not on here today, I think he said that they actually, that the paper mill did have some documentation. But, and that he was gonna, he can call, I don't remember who the general manager is.
Mm-hmm.
To find out the documentation of that. And I know that, well, we also know that PGE that owns the building has done some of their own historic inventory, but they haven't shared that information. So again, you know, we could only.
It's private property.
Yeah, it's private property. We could only inventory what we could see from public places. And there's no real public access to I mean, we do have some, you know, river photos that I've taken, you know, that lots of people have taken. I've taken some too, but we don't have any.
We probably have the last photos.
Yeah.
I didn't take many photos.
I have a video.
Google Earth from the river has some good images.
Yeah, there's like a kayaker, right?
Of the building.
Yeah, we
buildings.
I took some really good pictures of the buildings from the river too, which I think I may put online, but I can, and I can share them with you guys. But there hasn't been a write up on it.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's what you want. If that's what you're,
what I understand, there might be as many as 27 buildings on the island.
Okay, yeah,
and they range from the 1880s to the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to know which ones might be historically significant, which ones might be well suited for adaptive reuse. Mm-hmm. Again, it's all private property, but you know, a waterfront vision plan was approved and the property is probably going to be sold. Mm-hmm. And if we're trying to preserve historic resources, it's easier to advocate for it when we know what's actually there. And that's a hard thing to sort out right now. Mm-hmm. With the documents that I've looked at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks for that, dude. I was wondering if the sale was close to happening for the whole.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it for sale?
I don't know what it says.
There's the Willamette Falls Trust, the Intertribal Agency, which has received $45 million dollars from the state of Oregon, and they're raising additional funds, from what I understand, with the intention of purchasing.
Yeah, I don't know all the plans that they're intending on purchasing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they haven't shared that, so
yeah.
What lands are intending on purchasing, but the intent is to provide public access to the falls. Okay, so then the other work plan items are advising on the wayfaring and branding initiatives. Well, that project's been tabled, so I don't know that it will be, it's not going to be something we undertake in 2026. And then support the waterfront and Vision 43 planning efforts. The waterfront effort is complete now, and we're moving into the vision. I mean, the outstanding effort now is for Vision 43, which is a vision plan for the Highway 43 corridor.
That's been approved by Council, right? 43?
No. No, that's not.
It's on the agenda for 26?
Yes.
Or for Council?
Yes.
Okay.
And this plan, you know, it can be a supporting document. It's not going to be, you know, it can help inform the plan, the vision plan. But so when the vision plan is closer to, for Vision 43, we're having two public open houses in January and February, and then it's going to be moving into the adoption phase, which will include coming to the HRB for comments. So,
in January and
February are the open house. Yes.
Okay. And then back to 6, wayfinding and branding, is that tabled due to lack of funding at the moment?
Not so much lack of funding as lack of staff time.
Okay.
You guys have your priorities.
So. Yeah. And I think we were also saying that, you know, really the waterfront vision and Vision 43 should be kind of completed, because that kind of feeds this wayfinding and branding. So at least the wayfinding, you know.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Thanks. Yeah. And then of course, number 8, as always, working to improve DEIQ, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging into our community recommendations and actions. Great. That's an overlay.
Okay.
So that is our work plan for 2026 and 2027.
Okay. Perfect. And I guess number 6 will be removed from the final document, the finding and branding.
This has already been approved by the City Council.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be on there, and it could be that at the end of 2026, we move forward with the wayfinding.
Okay.
This is good to 2027 for the biennium, so it might be an early 2027 project start.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Meeting scheduled for 2026, next on the agenda.
Oh, you know what? Can we ask, just as part of the work plan, we have the annual report to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that here?
Yeah. And I sent that out late to you guys. I don't know if you guys got on WebEx, got the draft, but basically the report is it's a format that we fill out, and we send this to the City Council. So I kind of filled it out, and I want to get some feedback from you. We have the leadership identified as Kirsten as the chair, John Steele as the vice chair. The meeting time, originally we were going to have some time to discuss this in the city in our meeting, but it looks like the HRB needs to be moved to the second Wednesday of the month and going forward based on just the competing factors. So going forward in 2026, that's our meeting time. The HRB has met 6 times in 2025, and we failed to make quorum twice, and 4 meetings were canceled. So for the accomplishments, I drafted some, and then I wanted you guys to add any or take any off that you have. In February 2025, the HRB completed a historic design review for this proposed solar panels on a home in the Willamette National Historic District. We also submitted comments to the Army Corps of Engineers Willamette Locks Historic Property Management Manual and Story Map. In March, the HRB completed the design review of proposed changes to Historic City Hall. In April, the HRB received training on the Certified Local Government Program and its roles and responsibilities. And we also toured Historic City Hall to view the renovation. The HRB received updates on the Waterfront Project and Vision 43 and commented on the proposed CDC code cleanup amendments. And then in December, we reviewed and commented on the draft historic survey of the Robin Wood neighborhood. Any other accomplishments? Or do you want to modify any of those?
Did we tour Willamette in the past? Was it the year before?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right? 2024?
Yeah, it was 2024.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It looks complete to me.
So here, so the next item is 2025 challenges. And I would like, if you guys have anything better feedback on this, I just, my one challenge that I wrote down for you was that it didn't meet, the HRB did not meet quorum on two occasions.
I actually thought it was more often than that, but maybe I'm not.
Yeah. We had canceled meetings too, so.
What did we cancel those for, because of the quorum, or were they canceled for other reasons?
They were canceled for other reasons. Like one was our meeting date got changed.
Right.
Because the city council started meeting. So that was kind of a hard transition for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
When the city council meet?
Tuesdays.
They switch to
So the first and the third they meet at 6 p.m. and the second they meet at 1 p.m.
And are you at all those meetings?
No, I don't go to city council meetings. No. But they use these rooms.
Right.
And then I thought we could take the second Tuesday in this room, but another CAG, another advisory board meets in here that day, so we couldn't take that day. Like utility board or something, but and then the last one is the work plan and cancel priorities. I said due to lack of quorums, HRB reviews it works. Oh yeah, any comments back on the work plan to them? Oh, okay. So following up on the work plan, we don't have any historic design reviews in the works for you guys to look at. No nominations to the historic register are currently in process. The HRB reviewed the draft report. Oh, the Robin Wood survey, you just reviewed it and completed it. As far as the Westland Paper Mill, no activity on this priority. Making proposals on grant opportunities. We did that in early 2025 for the CLG that we did, grant this year. Number six, advising on the wayfinding and branding project. This project is not moving forward. It's a priority right now. And seven, support waterfront and Vision 43 planning efforts. The HRB received updates on these projects in 2025.
Sounds good.
Do we need to like formally update this?
Yeah, okay.
I can make a motion over this. Yes, there's amendments for looking at it. Commissioner.
I second approval.
Okay.
The work plan, priorities and work plan.
Okay. And the annual report?
And the annual report.
Yes.
Do we need to vote on it, or is
Just general thumbs up, I think.
All right. All agreed? All agreed? Excellent.
Agreed.
Thank you, Sherry. Okay, all right. The HRB, Construct Review Board Annual Report, and Priorities and Work Plan have been approved. So meeting schedule, is that something we've already covered?
Yeah, we covered that. Basically, the HRB has to move to the second Wednesday.
Okay.
Unless you want to meet on Monday. Any Monday is open.
No.
Any Monday? I don't think Wednesdays will work for me. How about for other members?
Wednesdays are perfect for me.
Okay. Great. Okay. Next item on the agenda. Board member items of interest. Does anybody
else?
I do have some comments, but does anybody else have anything they want to share? Did you want to talk about the outstanding items that you had mentioned, or
I think we did.
Great. One thing I was going to mention just real quickly is that I felt like when I joined the historic review board, it took me longer to get up to speed than I'd hoped. And I was just wondering what you all thought about, I thought I would take a stab at sort of a 1 or 2 page orientation PDF with live links to sort of important resources that it would be good for all members to be familiar with. The SHPO website, the map of where our historic properties are, some of the National Registry resources, the fact that we have 3 historic districts, just like a basic orientation so that we can share it with existing members and new members and just help them become more acquainted with the kind of things that help us with our decisions. I think that'd be okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
When we started, we were given a booklet. And I'm trying to remember what was in there.
We still have that. Find it, and we can put that together if you want it.
You have yours own.
Is it this? Just the chapters?
Was that what was in it? Was there anything else?
No, it was just the community development code. At least when I received it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think the thought was that the community development code is online, so we don't necessarily need to find here, but.
Right.
But I like the idea of a PDF that links things. So
does that code link to SHPO or no? Is there nothing in that code that specifies SHPO at all?
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. I think that's a great idea. If you know, there could be, I had the same situation when I came on board, and you know, I wasn't able to attend a lot of in-person meetings. And so I really didn't get introduced or be able to introduce myself to people. You know, I didn't know necessarily backgrounds. So, you know, just a standard, I don't know, but I love it. Whatever you do is going to be more than what I received. So it's great.
Okay. So I'll draft something and I will share it with Lynn and we can share it with the group. Anybody who finds other resources, we can add to it and take it from there.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Okay, then the other thing that I brought to discuss, and I don't know if you want to pull it up for the people.
Oh, I don't know that I have it. Let me see. I might be able to. Yeah.
So during the waterfront vision plan, I spoke in front of city council encouraging prioritizing the paper mill Morris Island properties to be considered for and encouraged for adaptive reuse. And during the city council meeting, I'd heard some concerns from city council members. One of them was about toxics on the island possibly interfering with adaptive reuse. And my thought was that there are properties on the East Coast that had hundreds of years more of industrialization and cleanup that have become successful adaptive reuse projects. Another comment was that the island isn't in the middle of an urban center. And I thought of a place like Edgefield with Minimums, which is its own destination. Plus, it's one of the most amazing views of waterfalls ever. So what I submitted to City Council were examples of adaptive reuse mills on other in other parts of the country. Most of them were on the East Coast. There were so many adaptive reuse projects in Massachusetts that they barely made the news. There's a website of 86 industrial areas, usually mills, that are already being used for current housing or cafes or hotels, office space, event spaces, things like that. I also tried to find examples of mills that are in the middle of an industrial or in the middle of an urban area or in a remote area. And I tried to find mills that had water on both sides, like Moore's Island does. So I provided to City Council 4 examples with live links, information about the year they were built, when they were converted, what their original use was, what they are now. And I also included images from Google Maps to show how they fit in the context of an urban or rural area.
Maybe one in Benton too, right?
Probably. That didn't come up in my search. Oh, but you're right. Yeah.
Indianapolis.
Yeah, there's a lot of good examples. I did try to find paper mills, and I have 2 examples of paper mills. And I also found 2 textile mills, which are also associated with dyes that can be somewhat toxic. And as I've mentioned, some of them did have water on both sides, for instance, the one in Danville, Virginia. I tried to find ones that were concrete, like the prominent buildings on Moore's Island.
So that's one on one side.
Okay. It was fun research, a lot of really great spaces. The challenge at Moore's Island is access. It's challenging, but it's not insurmountable. You would have to have a pretty high bridge over the locks to get, emergency vehicles in the event of an emergency, get supplies to the island and to get materials away that like trash and waste and things like that. But I just felt that it would be an amazing location if some of those historic buildings
could be saved. Design of it, didn't they?
They did of that general area.
I think it was in the middle. Okay.
It was, I thought the Oregon City side too. It was for the, when it was for I think the tribes hired them. And it was when the Grand Ronde was still part of the Intertribal Agency. So talking about this was something that I'd hoped to talk to at the Historic Review Board meetings, but we didn't have any, so I just left it alone as a citizen. And then in the process, I did meet other advocates who are also hoping to encourage adaptive reuse on the island. So just wanted to share what I had shared with the City Council after I spoke to them. So, that's everything I have. Staff items of interest.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I guess a couple of what I have is when you had someone come to the counter the other day or earlier this week, they are interested in listing their home. They are on Buck Street and they are interested in looking for information on listing their house as a local resource or as a historic resource. They don't know about national versus local. And it's a bungalow, Craftsman bungalow. And I just want to let you know that that's kind of that just happened this earlier this week. And we're going to, talk to her. And she said she plan is to live to be 80, and she, that's in 4 years. So I guess she has 4 years to get this done. I don't know. So that's going to be fun. Anyway, so we're working, you know, we're giving her some information and stuff like that. So
oh, wonderful. Yeah. I know that I've sent the paperwork to a handful of people, and some of it involves some pretty deep research about the history of the house and digging. And I don't know, probably the information that you provided would help somebody do that.
Oh,
for the forms?
Yeah.
At least for the National Registry
yeah.
forms that Chapeau.
Well, if you recall, we had the last year we had those workshops on how to list houses, and we have those resources sorted mm-hmm. by those, and yeah, so
okay.
But again, so the question is, and that's why I was interested in this multi-property designation, because you know, if we did that, then we could list, you know, we could it's an easier lift to get one house or, you know, a couple houses versus, you know, an entire neighborhood. That's huge. That's a lot. That's a big undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get the momentum for people to do that. So anyway, that's kind of exciting stuff.
Well, good. I hope we hear from them. I hope they submit them, and that I assume it would come in front of us.
Eventually. Oh yeah, yeah, because it would. Yeah, you would make a recommendation to the city council. They generally would make that recommendation to the city council, and the city council will make a determination of whether to include it as a historic resource.
You said there's this one in Willamette.
Bulk Street.
Bulk Street.
We've done a survey on our reconnaissance level survey of Buck Street, but we haven't and so there are homes there that are eligible for a district, and whether or not those homes want to band together to create a district is a secondary question. So the information's there if they want to move forward.
Great. Okay. Anything else?
Anything
in turn?
Regina, Sherry, John, anything?
All right. With that, I will adjourn our HRV meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So.